Welcome to the Perspectives on Healthcare podcast, where members of the medical community from different roles, venues, and locations share their unique perspectives on quality healthcare, its future, and how to improve it. Now, from the Your Keynote Speaker studio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here is your host, Rob Oliver.
Thank you and welcome. This is episode number 99 of the Perspectives on Healthcare podcast, and today we are doing interview number 13 from the Patient Interview Marathon. It is with my friend Matt Seely from out in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and I hope that you enjoy what he has to say.
Welcome, my friend. What is your name?
Good morning, Mr. Oliver, or my keynote speaker. I am Matt Seely.
Excellent. And Matt, where are you from?
I am from the paradise that is Pennsylvania. I live in the capital, Harrisburg.
Wonderful. The bustling metropolis that is Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So do me a favor, tell me a little bit about yourself and your experiences in healthcare, please.
Sure. Well, currently I'm the director of the Statewide Independent Living Council. We advocate for people with disabilities, often about things such as healthcare and other interests for people with disabilities. But healthcare is a primary one. But I would say first and foremost, I'm a patient like everyone else that needs healthcare. And
Okay. So as part of the Statewide Independent Living Council, what do you think are some of the healthcare concerns that people with disabilities are facing?
Oh, geez. Well, I mean, a big one in Pennsylvania right now is managed care. And I was listening to your previous guest, and I want to just, you were talking about tweetable moments. Like, I was ready to get firing away on my phone. And, you know, he was talking about nurses and doctors and all that. I'll tell you one thing I hear over and over and over again. Doesn't affect me personally, but individuals that are deaf, you know, when they go to a healthcare provider, their doctor, whoever, you know, the doctor is basically speaking a different language. Mm. They don't have interpreters, and they don't make those kind of arrangements. And therefore, you've got an individual that's deaf in there that doesn't understand at all what's happening.
Right. So, and one of the things that my experience has been with people in the deaf community, sometimes their child or their spouse is asked to translate instead of getting a medical professional. And, you know, can you imagine, like a teenager having to translate medical terminology, and, if it was a different language, you would make sure that there's a professional interpreter there. And yet somehow people that are deaf, oftentimes their family is asked to serve as interpreters. Is that an experience that you've heard about as well?
Oh, for sure. And it's funny, I was reading your, about what you're trying to accomplish today. And you said something about how you had spent more time in hospitals than the average person. And I can, I'm in that line as well. But it's funny, every time you go into a hospital, they ask you for your insurance and all that stuff. And up on their wall is, if you speak a different language, and there's 50 different languages on that piece of paper, but if you need an interpreter, what do you do then? I just find that kind of ironic.
Yeah. And just one of the subtle subcontexts that's there is that the American Sign Language has a different context or a different syntax than English does. And so it's not just a matter of translating the words, but it's even sentence order and the way that it's presented, which is part of the reason why it's so important to Absolutely. Bring in a licensed, trained translator.
Absolutely.
So wonderful. Okay, great point. Along the way with your healthcare journey, have you met any healthcare heroes?
I have two. And I was listening to what some of your other guests were saying, and I'm going to stick with my two. Okay. My first one is ADAPT. Okay. I think ADAPT, and I'm, for anybody out there that doesn't know what ADAPT, I think originally it was an acronym, but I don't know what it stands. I don't think it is anymore.
Right.
But I think ADAPT has done so much for people with disabilities in Washington, D.C. to promote, you know, our rights and our needs for quality health care, that we would be forgotten or left behind long ago if not for them.
Okay. Can you, Matt, can you explain for my viewers what ADAPT is?
Well, I mean, I'm only kind of loosely affiliated with ADAPT. You'll see on TV a lot of times or news ADAPT, you know, chaining themselves to this or that to fight for certain rights. But in essence, I believe ADAPT is an advocacy organization that does whatever is necessary to accomplish their goal, whether it be healthcare or transportation or whatever.
Right. So, I mean, to me, ADAPT is an advocacy organization that is not afraid to take direct action. And by direct action, I mean, as you said, chain themselves to things or, you know, that kind of thing in order to make sure that their voices are heard.
Absolutely.
And it's all centered. It's usually people with disabilities who are doing the advocacy, and it's centered around disability specific issues.
For us, by us.
Yes, for us, by us, and the same way at nothing about us, without us. So
exactly. Yeah. My second hero is my father.
Okay.
Really quick, I'll tell you a little story. I was injured in a car accident at the age of 21. I don't know why, but 21 seems to be the number that a lot of people with our injury have, for whatever reason. But at that age, I lived in a nursing home for 5 years. Wow. And yeah, it was either live with mom and dad or live in a nursing home. I chose the nursing home. You know, if I had the choice again, maybe I would have made a different one. Maybe not. I don't know. But in any event, while I was in the nursing home, I had friends. Everybody has friends. And I was an adult. And we went out, and one night we went out and did what adults do. I'll leave it just like that. But when I returned to the nursing home, the staff was afraid that I had done something because I did what adults do. And I'm only talking about imbibing in adult beverages. That's nothing crazy. But so they took me to the emergency room because I had a few too many drinks. And my father met me there. And the doctor came in and lectured me about how bad alcohol was for people with disabilities and this and that. And I looked at the doctor in the face, and I won't repeat the word that I used with him, but I basically told him, you know nothing about me, so keep your opinion to yourself. And the doctor put this look on, and he turned to my father, and my father said to him, you know, he's right. And, you know, it was at that point where that was kind of like a seed was planted in me, where I found my healthcare was my responsibility, and I was in charge of it. Not the doctors, they're providing a service. So, you know, that's why I look at him as you know, and fathers and mothers do all those kinds of things for you. That really planted a seed in me.
Yeah, what a powerful way for your dad to be there for you and to back you up and say, like, hey, in some ways, like, this is your life, and you are responsible for the decisions that you make, and you need to, you're responsible for the consequences of those decisions.
And, just like everyone else.
Yeah. And to me, this is something that I think you're very familiar with here in the state of Pennsylvania. We talk about the right to risk as it relates to people with disabilities. And so you need to be informed about the potential consequences of your actions.
Sure.
Having those, having that awareness, then you have the right to make an informed decision in which it's up to you whether you engage in this behavior or engage in this activity based on your understanding of what the risks are and what you're willing to do. Does that make sense? Is that accurately summarized?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not a 21-year-old kid anymore, and I don't make those similar choices, but absolutely, I should have the right to make those choices like anyone else if I want that path.
Sure. Okay. What does quality healthcare mean to you?
I feel like you're going to hear a lot of similar themes today on that one. I was trying to think about that one. I think quality healthcare is the ability to access medical procedures and doctors and dentists and whatnot for routine or specialty procedures without having to mortgage my house, without having to, you know, jump through a bunch of hurdles or travel to Pittsburgh. You know, I'm in Harrisburg, travel to New Jersey or Washington, D.C. My brother had a procedure done and he had to drive, you know, 2 hours away to get it done. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, affordable, accessible. You know, these are buzzwords we all throw around. But having a medical procedure shouldn't bankrupt you.
Right. So let me just say this. When you're talking about accessible, you and I are both wheelchair users, and you're not talking about accessibility from the term of having a ramp that will allow you to get into the building. You're talking about literally the ability to get in the door, yeah. To get an appointment, to get it where you need to be to get your procedures done. That's the kind of accessibility you're talking about. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, it shouldn't be this hard. I have been on private insurance. You know, I've been on my parents' insurance. I've been on Medicare, and I'm on Medicare now currently. And it really shouldn't be this hard. When I was on a previous insurance, I won't name the name, Aetna, but when I was on that insurance, I got a number of procedures done in an outpatient hospital setting. And Medicare and that company would fight tooth and nail to not be the payer. Because it was in a hospital setting, Medicare, whatever it is, A, should pay for it, or would generally pay for a hospital stay, but not outpatient hospital procedures. And the other company would not go along with that, and they keep saying Medicare should pay for it. So, I mean, there should just be clear, easily understood ways of how insurances work so that all these burdens don't fall on the patient.
It's interesting to hear what you're saying, because it's in this, the patient gets lost, because they're the ones that have the procedure. They're the ones that have received the service. And now they're the ones that are being harassed, or, you know, they're the ones that are getting the calls that say, like, hey, where's the payment for this? Exactly. What's going on with this? And
collection in the agencies. Meantime,
you have two agencies that are, or two, you know, insurance providers who are fighting back and forth to say, it's your issue. It's your issue. And yeah, that's enough to make you want to pull your hair out. And you and I aren't overly
good
in that department.
So we're running out of hair to pull out.
we'll leave that alone. So what do you wish your medical providers understood about you?
I was listening to your previous guests, and I find that happens over and over again. I'll go into a doctor, and the doctor is just cold and callous, doesn't care about me. I'm like a project or a task for them. Whereas the nurse, you know, hi, Matthew, you know, how are you doing today? How are you feeling? You know, it's like two different worlds. I can't tell you how many doctors I've fired. Get out of my room. I'll call the police and consider it assault if you come anywhere near me again. And I've said that to a number of doctors, and they'll come back crawling again, you know, oh, please, can I take care? You know, and I say, you know, why don't you listen to your nurse for a minute? They actually have decent bedside manner. They know how to treat an individual. Just because I'm in a wheelchair or whatever my disability is, doesn't make me any different than any other patient. You know, whatever you read in your book, you know, maybe that works generally, but each disability is different and each patient is different. And until they understand that, I think we're going to have a lot of problems.
Yeah. And I mean, this is, it's an interesting concept, because what you have is, you know, like the concept of normative data, right? Like this is what fits the general population. And I've said this repeatedly, but I don't have a study of the general population. I have a study that has a sample size of one, and that's it, and that's me. And I can tell you what is going on with me. I can tell you what my circumstances are. We can, you know, we can discuss, you know, I'm very well informed in my own care, in my own situation, but you know, you've got to respect that, and you've got to treat me as being unique. And not because, like, it's the, I'm unique because I am, you know, I'm special and I, you know, like I'm a unicorn, that kind of thing. But it's a matter of everybody is themselves. They're not necessarily fitting into
their cookie cutter, for disabilities.
Yep. So what is one thing medical professionals can start doing today to improve the quality of healthcare?
Get to know their patients. I think I was going to answer that with the, about interpreters as well.
Okay.
But I do think that, you know, some of these providers need to get to know their patients a little bit better and treat it more as, and know the families too. Like one of your previous guests said, I think that that's crucial, to understand how a disability actually impacts that individual's life. You know, that is just the key that they're missing.
Got it. Hey, Matt, thank you for joining me today. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. I appreciate your perspective on healthcare. Take care, man.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks for listening to Perspectives on Healthcare. Visit perspectivesonhealthcare.com to learn more about Rob Oliver or to subscribe so you never miss an episode. If this podcast was valuable, we'd appreciate a review on iTunes. Or if you tell a friend or coworker about the show, that would be helpful too. Join us again next time for more Perspectives on Healthcare.